My name's Joe Morrissey. It's really an honor and a privilege to be asked today to preside at the 20th Carl Tobe Award Ceremony. This award was inaugurated by the section in 1990 to serve two purposes. The first was an opportunity to remember the many contributions that Carl made to the mental health policy and research community, and second, to recognize a current member of the section who has made important contributions to the field of public mental health. I'm lucky to have known and worked with Carl Tobe and with this year's awardee, Tai-Wei Hu, so I feel especially honored to be presiding at today's session. Tai now joins a list of distinguished mental health service researchers who have received the Tobe Award in the past 20 years, people like David Mechanic, Marianne Teston, Len Stein, Tom McGuire, Howard Goldman, Richard Frank, Barbara Burns, a couple of Tay's colleagues, Bill Hargraves and Richard Scheffler. First, I'd like to say a few words in memory of Carl Tobe. I first met Carl in 1966 when I joined the Office of Biometry at the National Institute of Mental Health as a commissioned officer in the Public Health Service. We had both trained in sociology, and Carl had a few additional years' experience, having worked at the National Center for Health Statistics. This was the heyday of community mental health centers in the United States and at NIMH. The two of us were tasked with expanding NIMH's national reporting program for outpatient and inpatient mental health statistics to incorporate the new community mental health centers. We worked together for 2 years designing and implementing the new inventory of community mental health centers, which a number of years later became the inventory of mental health organizations under Ron Manderscheid's direction. Carl went on to a 25-year career at the National Institute of Mental Health. From 1979 until 1984, he was chief of the Mental Health Economics Branch and then deputy director of the Division of Biometry and Epidemiology. He published a number of important papers on trends in mental health service utilization and financing. He played a major role in creating the mental health services research agenda at the National Institute of Mental Health and in developing the field of mental health economics by mentoring young investigators and assisting them in obtaining research grant funding, a role and a responsibility that's dearly lacking at NIMH these days, if I might be permitted a little editorial aside. He died in 1989 while waiting for a liver transplant. He was 50 years old. At the time, he was professor of mental hygiene at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, a position he moved on to after retiring a year or two earlier from NIMH. I'd also like to say a few words about Tai-Wei Hu. This year's awardee, Tai-Wei, is professor emeritus of health economics, former associate dean and department chair in the School of Public Health at UC Berkeley. Currently, he is the director of the Center for International Tobacco Control Policy Research at the California Public Health Institute. Tai did his doctoral work at the University of Wisconsin, and after a stint with the World Bank, took a position at Penn State University. It was at this time in the early 1980s that he was tapped by Carl Tobe to serve on the New Services Research Review Committee at NIMH during a period of rapid growth in mental health services and policy research. It was there that I first met Tai. At the time, I was working for the New York State Office of Mental Health and joined the review panel along with Carol Mowbray, who was then working for the Michigan Department of Mental Health. The two of us were brought on to the review committee so that state-focused research studies would get a more sympathetic hearing by the committee. Tai, along with Tom McGuire, served as the two economists on the panel at the time, when it seemed, to me at least, that every other proposal we reviewed involved econometric modeling, many using data from the National Health Insurance Experiment, which was still the piece de resistance in the early 80s. It was Tai and Tom's job to explain to the rest of the committee what these strange-looking equations and difference-in-difference models were all about. Tai went on to a distinguished career in health economics at Berkeley, where he has served as a consultant and advisor to a number of federal and state agencies. His mental health work is focused on cost effectiveness, and financing, using experimental and quasi-experimental designs to address important questions about community mental health services. Among his many publications is the influential book, Cost Outcome Methods for Mental Health, that he co-authored with Bill Hargraves in 1998. Another notable accomplishment is the role that Tay has played in the awakening of health economics as an academic discipline in China. He has held Fulbright and other visiting professorships at several Chinese universities, including those at Nankai, Sichuan, and the Shanghai Medical University. I'm delighted then to have this opportunity to welcome Tay Wei to the fraternity and sorority of TOBE awardees, and on behalf of the APA's mental health section, to present him with the 20th Carl A. TOBE Award in recognition for his long and distinguished career in mental health services research. There you go.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Good afternoon. Thanks very much for Joe's fine comment, praise. I also want to thank the committee, including many of the people here, to select me as a part of the distinguished group of recipients. I feel very humble and much honored to be a group of the previous distinguished recipients, including like Don Stanwyck here as well, and others. Really feel very fortunate that I met a couple of good friends, including Richard Scheffler. More than 30 years ago, both Richard and I were in Washington on leave. And during that time, I wanted to fill in the gap how I get to know Carl. So Carl was taking a course, working on his PhD, and he took a course in mental health economics. And at that time, he was very interested to develop this mental health economics program. So Richard introduced me to Carl, and I were together saying how they can design the research program. Later on, I was introduced because there are not too many health economists at that time. And so NIMH issued an RFP, and they need somebody to review. And I did not apply for it, so I was qualified for the RFP committee. So I began to serve for about a two term, about 5 or 6 years. So Joe was one of the group there. And so through those kind of review, I learned mental health issues. And so therefore, upon arriving in Berkeley, West Coast, I decided to apply a grant. And based on what I learned about the mental health issue and plus the economics, so I tried to use the California data as a way to look at the one of issue that time NIMH looking for called public and academic collaboration. So here was my opportunity almost like more than 25 years ago to start down this. So now I'm going to start the program, I guess. So here is the acknowledgement. I'm going to start with that. As you know, when we do the mental health service research, it requires a lot of collaborations among the clinical psychologists and sociologists, organization behavioral, and physicians, and also biostatistics. So here is a group that, like my dear colleague June Bloom, she's here. She come here just for this session, and we're going to go back tonight. And Joan has been working on this Colorado study, the third topic I'm talking about. Joan actually was a PI, and she probably knows more than I do about the operation inside. And then, of course, Richard Scheffler, he couldn't make it. He is teaching today. We're very serious about teaching. And Lonnie Snowden also will work together on the ethnic minority matching issues. And of course, we do not want to forget Agnes Rupp. She has been funding, providing advice to many of these projects. And Jenny Jarrell, I think David knows her quite well, when she was at California, we worked together. And then Dan Chandler, he worked a lot on the Long Beach study. So we work together a lot. And then another person in California, Stephen Maber, he is probably the longest tenure as the director of mental health for 18 years in California, regardless of Republican or Democrat. And so all these funding are coming from NIMH. I want to thank them. So there are also a lot of collaborators. Many of them are former student and or postdoc, but there are two colleagues like Joe mentioned, Bill Hargreave and Martha Shumway. The two of them work together with me on the book and plus other studies. So let me just briefly outline what the presentation will be. So first we're going to talk about the policy issue research question about this title about the cost of cost and the outcome of financing. Second, I'm going to have three case studies about the cost containment in Santa Clara County. That was my first involvement study. And the second follow-up was just by chance that we do the California capitation experiment. And then the third one, I mentioned earlier that we moved to Colorado under June's leadership. We do some of the analysis, the modeling on that. And so finally, we'll just talk about what does it mean, so what kind of research we're going to have there. So as we know, the key word of the mental health, community mental health service research, or the service itself, is the deinstitutionalization. That happened 50, 60 years ago, which really caused a lot of the impact to the responsibilities to the state and local government. And this deinstitutionalization also will affect about the effect of usual mental health organization beyond mental health, such as the criminal justice system and supporting housing and so on, the homeless shelters. And so this becomes a responsibility that is shifted to the community mental health services, and such that the social support and through housing and vocational training. But during that time, there were no really coordinated system there. And we improved quite a bit. But in the 20 years ago, still in the stage of the sort of learning and doing by doing this. And so the question, how do we meet these kind of services? So let's look back right now. What is the current status of the community mental health service? So I have two slides. One is talking about the number of people who have utilized the services. So based on latest SAMHSA data, it shows that about 5.6 million people in the country has utilized these mental health services, community mental health services in 2008. About 20 out of 1,000 individuals. So it's still a major issue here. Now look at, since we're studying California and Colorado, so I wanted to look at California. California has about more than 10% of share. Well, California has about 10% of population. And so it's a little bit over 10%. Obviously, Colorado is much smaller, so we have about 82,000 then. That's in terms of size of a population covered under the community mental health services. What about the expenditures? Well, overall, the U.S. has spent about $21, $22 billion on the community mental health services there. California has a larger share, more than 10%, $3.5 billion. So why is California so resourceful? Well, there is a bill we'll talk about later, called Proposition 63-64. That is what we call Millionaire's Tax. And so that we got money from that. And our research indirectly relating to the proposition here, too. And so it's almost 80% of the funding is for the community mental health services. So what is the research policy research question? Well, the question is, I guess we all understand, there's a question about how is the cost and outcome when we using different way of financing, such as fee-for-service, such as capitation, that and different organization approach, how we can find out the two dependent variables, cost and outcome. And then hopefully we can provide some quantitative numbers for policymakers, not at national level, but at the county level, at the state level, that they can learn something or learn to have some reference point to deliver the services. And so this becomes really three questions we're asking. So how can the CMHC efficiently deliver its services? Second is what are the outcomes when we have different alternative payment system? And then what are the incentives to look at that? So here, given the limitation of time, I also wanted to have time to have interaction and questions. So I'm going to tell you three stories. And there are a lot of numbers there, so I need to tell you a little bit of stories to make it more interesting. So the first one is the Santa Clara County. Now, where is Santa Clara County? Well, that is, there's no map here. So it's south of San Francisco. It's sometimes people call it Silicon Valley, okay? San Jose, that's the major area there. And during that time, and in the late 80s, early 90s, Jenny Durrell, right now she is the University of South Carolina. Yeah. She was the director of research in the Santa Clara County. The director, medical director, is Ken Meinhardt. He is a very efficient number person. He has an information system. He can always looking for numbers. When he goes to the meeting, he looks at the computer, even that time, to tell us how many people are enrolled and what is the cost. So, of course, every county worried about the cost. So what the issue involved for the Ken Meinhardt is how can contain the cost? This is nothing new. Everybody, every time, always worried about the cost containment. So first, we're going to study the cost issue. How can we contain the cost? Second, how can we design a system so we can contain the cost and also deliver some alternative schemes? And so we got together and got the NIMH funding to study. The first is to study the cost pattern of the Santa Clara County. Actually, we also did this at the same time we did a study in San Francisco County. But Santa Clara County has much data, better data, and we have Ken Meinhardt to support. So we're going to do more work on that. So the simple idea is here is that we can see the distribution of costs is very skewed, just like medical service, but especially mental health services. Within the county, you know, it's about 12,000 individuals use the public mental health services there. But the 20% of the people with the severely mentally ill, and there are a lot of them are the adjusted disorder. I was told at that time because of a lot of Vietnamese immigrants and the migrant workers, so that involved the kind of a special pattern. So when we study the cost, look at distribution, you can see the big difference between the median cost and the average cost. Very, very big. So the key point here is that the highlighted yellow line there, that the 1% of user, we talk about 120 people out of the county, took about 1/3 of a budget. And 5%, which is still about, you know, 600 people or so, took about half of the budget. That is a very important message. Now, actually, that message is applied to the medical expenditure too, even across the U.S., similar kind of pattern. The question then is, how can we identify these individuals? And we study the service pattern, and if we can design a system and such that we'll be able to contain the cost, that's the point that we can look at. And then we can also not to compromise the outcome. So, and we learned that time that before our study, the famous study in Lake Mendota, Leonard Stein, and also Bert Weisbrod, an economist there. They did the study, Leonard Stein did the randomized, very small sample, about 67 individuals. Okay. However, it's randomized, and Bert Weisbrod was able to look at the cost and the outcome of study, and concluded was it is cost effective. So we learned from that experience, and Jenny and I, mainly Jenny, designed this program, say, how can we learn from the Wisconsin, the PAC model? PAC model means really assertive community program. Many of you know more than I do of the program there. So try to utilize this community services and coordinate that. So what we need to do is to design a system that to dilute this Lake Mendota model. The staff patient ratio in the Wisconsin model was like 1 to 10. That's too expensive. So we wanted to do, in this case, 1 to 20. And so this is the, so in, this, in the right column is the PEC model. It's a typical Wisconsin Lego Minuta model there. But then we wanted to say, what if we don't have psychiatrists? Or what if we have more social workers, paramedical into that? So we have randomized, this is also randomized. We have 120 people there, randomized to three groups. And then we have, one is called, provide a lot of intensive services, like a 24-hour service, telephone available and so on, but no psychiatrist there. And then there's the one where we have psychiatrists, but you know, sort of a five day a week and so on. So different kind of combination, different resources, different mechanism to deliver the services, and to see what is the cost and outcome difference of that program. There are too many numbers, so that's why I got to highlight. So one thing we want to do is we know that it's social support, so we want to look at the society cost. So this is where we want to look at the with good data within the county, but we also design lots of different questionnaires. We go to jail system, we go to police department, we go to family members to interview. So we were able to, the study was able to follow up all these sources of cost, and then we follow them to look at the cost differences over the time. So you can see that this is the before the trial, 6 months before the trial. And then every 6 months, we follow for the 18 months period of time. And you can see here, there's so many numbers. You look in here that one key point is that you can see the drastic cost reduction, the difference of the cost from 6 months to 18 months. So every project, the program there, they have reduced about 50% of the cost. And so the question is, where the cost the reduction come from? Well, actually you can see the big difference in terms of the inpatient days. The inpatient day is reduced from 35 days for 6 months period, on average to 16. And this PEC model, 32 to 9. Okay. Obviously, because we have done a lot of the case management, so there are a lot of effort into the visit there. So we count the visit by the system was well designed. We can every 15 minutes at the visit. So if you visit once but it takes an hour, that's two visits. So we make sure it's a uniform kind of measurement. But you can see this intensive, this case management increased quite a bit there. So you can see the switch of the service pattern, which is the cost, the outcome of the service there. So when we're looking at that, given the change of the service pattern, and we now want to combine these, there's so many cost elements there, too many tables, so we want to divide into two groups. One is with supportive service, essentially outpatient, medication, and case management. The other is intensive, which costs a lot more money, which is the inpatient, skilled nursing, and so on. So if we combine these costs into two groups, and then you will see what happened is that, so there's an increase in supportive costs of every month, every 6 months period. The T0 is the baseline. So we went to every 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to compare the cost. So this is an increase in the cost there from the supportive cost there. However, there's a reduction of the inpatient. So I gave you the figure about the number of days. Now we measure in terms of dollars. Okay. So dollar cost, you can see decrease in cost is much more than the increase in the supportive cost there. So the bottom line is what is the ratio? So if you increase, so essentially toward the end of the 12 months or 60 months, it says that if you increase $1 in the case management supportive cost, you could save about $4, for $5 in this intensive cost there. So this study help us to sort of give us some kind of quantified number there and then provide more understanding about the composition and the work of this. So the conclusion we have here is that the case management service can reduce inpatient costs, which is we know all along. But that this was like, you know, more than 20 years ago, our story there, right? And those, especially for these severely mentally ill patients. And the other thing is that there's a trade-off, again, from the data we have shown, the case management versus the inpatient. Now, what about the outcome? So we wanted to know, you know, the three programs. Initially, we thought maybe the PAC model, the outcome should be better, because Jenny did a lot of instrument, a lot of behavioral instrument, and we survey random regression a lot of times. We didn't show any difference among the three programs. Now, why didn't show the program? I have sort of a couple of reasons. Number one, maybe it's too small sample size. We only 40 programs each, didn't show much. Secondly, I still believe, I'm not the expert on the psychometrics, but I think some of these instruments are not really sensitive to those severely mentally ill patients. So the conclusion, I guess many years ago when I had a conversation with Agnes, said, you know, what happened is that you reduce the cost and outcome didn't make a change. I don't know whether that's true or not, but at least not measurable difference there. So that was the study that we did in the local level in a county. So by that time, the state of California, of course, are concerned about the cost of the entire state. And then the legislators and also the mental health management group, they took several trips to the East Coast, to Wisconsin, to Rochester, and to Rhode Island to see how those capitation model work, and also there's the sort of PAC model and so on. And so they decided to say, let's introduce a bill called 3777. The idea is that what if the state, going to have a capitation program and let the county to bid for the experiment. And so county has started the program and trying to compare the cost and outcome under the capitation program. And we know what capitation, what it means is a fixed cost and a well-defined time period, a range of services. And hopefully that reduces the cost and maybe hopefully will not under-treat the patient, right? So this is the 3777, the bill that the 1989 started. Now, the state really set the capitation rate. When the state set capitation rate, this amount, of course, everybody bid for that amount. I mean, there's no need to underbid, right? And so this rate was decided based on the state inpatient the jail system to try to figure out that would be the amount. And also, the state was very generous because it's an experiment, it's pilot work. So they also have some like a cushion money, 10%. If they really run overrun or some innovative program, we will pay for it. So in fact, the Long Beach, which is the Southern California, bid for it, called the Long Beach Village, and to succeeded to get. There are only two counties. Today I'm going to talk about only one, the Long Beach, because it's a famous one right now. The other one is the rural county, it's called Stanislaus County, near Yosemite National Park there. So the Long Beach, the village, you call it a village, very interesting site. I went there, we applied for the grant. So the state put in the money to the experiment, and that one, I was also the PI on that one. So we went to the visit, and the village actually, it was in a church, and remodeled, and then making into different sections. Has a cafeteria there, and also has like a 7-Eleven kind of grocery store there, and then counseling. Okay. And so it's very innovative, and they have the coordination of that. The requirement of this, because the state said we have to do randomized trial. So we have a three group. Our project team has one member, and the Long Beach has one member, and then the state has one member, do a lottery. So make sure there's no bias selection into a comparison group, experiment group. And so we were quite serious about it. So essentially that's like 120 for the 120 for the experiment group, 120 for the comparison group. But you know, there's the attrition, the dropout. So when we started already, it's 102. So this is the Long Beach program is known for what they call integrated service agency, ISA. And so they have a high-time psychiatrist there, 24 hours, and they provided employment training on site because they have cafeteria, they have the grocery store there. They help to do all those things. And they also try to help because many of the individuals who have alcoholism, drug, and so on, one third of them have that. So I want to make sure that improve those kind of service as well. So there's too many numbers. So what you can see here is that these people are severely mentally ill. You know, you combine with bipolar and schizophrenia, about 62% or 75%. So this is the ISA group and the comparison group. So these are the, unlike the Santa Clara County and others, or Colorado, this is really is severely ill individuals there. And it's very intensive services. You can see that the cost differences, the Long Beach, the we call village, that the case management spent a lot of time, a lot of money into that for the second year, the data we can see, about 707, medication and socialization, and even employment there. So compared to these numbers, you can see that the comparison group actually is care as usual. They don't do anything. We just follow the data collection, the instrument there. So you can see that the cost differences is 19,000 versus 6,000. You may wonder that the capitation is 15,000 per person. How come we got 19,000? Well, I'll tell you a story now. What happened is, there's a slide on this. The village negotiated with the state. So, you know, there's dropout. So why don't you just, the budget you have to us, 1.8 million, why don't we keep the money? So we will keep the money and deliver the service to the 100 people. So therefore, the nature of capitation has changed. It's no longer capitation. It's a global budget. So you can see that when you look into this is the 19,000 is the mental health services, which is covered by the state money. But of course, there are also the other non-mental health service, which we collect data from the medical services there and from the justice system. And then we also look at the support system, the entitlement, the payment. It's a very high cost service there. It's a very high cost service there. And so compared to the care as usual, it's almost like $10,000 difference there. And but the other thing you can see, there is some benefit of that. The family burden has reduced. The cost, we surveyed the family members, we find out that families spend less money, less worry. We have also an instrument to measure that. And so in that sense that those who are in village, that the family is members that are better off than others. And also that the other information we can see, because this is like a vocational training. So we put $19,000 there, there's some like their income transfer. The people who employed, see the wage earners, so then from the first year, about 30% more than the other. By the third year, about two-thirds of them are employed in the system. Okay. And then, if you look into the dollar value of the amount, the wage is higher. So when you look at the cost there, it depends on how you interpret the results there. But from the village, in terms of service delivery system, the people, the members in the program, they feel much more satisfied. So Dan Chandler and June Mizell, the two of them are looking at psychological cost, psychological instrument there. So we run the regression again. Look at that. You can see there is some benefit of the outcome there in terms of independent living and from employment, and no worse than the comparison group on the right hand side. Essentially, that they all feel better on this. So this program that we did, we learned something about the capitation. We learned from failure. So if we really want to do capitation, we better stick to this per member cost there. And otherwise, it's not capitation. And then we also know that there is this cost shifting there. And in terms of from psychological mental health service to the medication service there. And one good outcome is that the employment record from the village is much better than others. And there the people are much happier. So learning from that, so what happened to the state? So this is another kind of lesson we should know. So if you really want to do capitation, what is the right rate to do the capitation? Capitation is a very vague word there. So you really want to do, it's a science then. You want to look at the data, you look at the rate, the case mix, all the things. And then you also need to look at the enrollment size, you know, what the economy scale we call it, right? And then also look at what the benefit included in package there. And so if the word of capitation alone, it doesn't mean much. You really have to do a well-defined study program to do it. So by the time we finish the study, well, apparently the Long Beach, the village, is known for their outcome. It's not known for the cost, but known for the outcome. So the people in San Diego, and the county of San Diego, and their senators introduced the bill of AB 34 in 99. And then said, okay, why don't we use the same model to the entire state? So the assembly bill model 2034. And that is called Integrated Service of Homeless Mentally Ill Patient. And that model, now, since then, they really want to fund the study cost per membership. Not going to be like, no more of those kind of global budget issue anymore. And they insist on the integrated services there, and they want to look at accountability on this. So there's a reporting system on this. So this follow-up, the Bill 2034, there is a very good outcome in terms of the follow-up, the report we got from them. The reduction of incarceration and inpatient days, and also homeless days was also reduced. And they got a chance to employ it. So our governor, he's known for cutting the budget. And so, of course, California is in a big deficit anyway, right? It was lucky that in the 204, there's a Proposition 63. And that was called a Mental Health Service Act, passed that. It's called a Millionaire's Tax on Mental Health Service. So if you at California reporting your disposable income, taxable income, more than $1 million, tax 1% of that, additional 1% for the mental health services. So that was a windfall gain. So even though the governor cut this bill in 2034, the funding of this bill started from $648 million in 2006, the last year of it, $1.3 billion. So Steve is very happy. He has a problem of how to allocate the money in the state. So, but the funding of that, still, the Proposition 63 still follow this capitation and follow the per membership and to do this. So now we're going to go to the Colorado study. By the time we finish in the California study, we have a Western Mental Health Association, and the people from Colorado during that time, like Nancy Wilson, Bill Bush, you know, all these. When I called Colorado this year, because I want to learn more about what's happened to Colorado, because I want to make a presentation to learn what's going on, they don't know who is Nancy Wilson and Bill Bush anymore. They actually reorganized already. But so that time, Jim Bloom was a leader to take over this the evaluation part of it. And so we got the funding from NIMH, but the experiment was done in Colorado. So the Colorado capitation is a much bigger scale and a much longer scale. So Jim actually can tell us more about the insight, knows more about it. He can make a comment on that. So in the 90s, we know that managed care is the word. So we wanted to do this, and we want to apply this to the mental health area. And so by essentially we want to use the managed care model, and so especially for the severely mentally ill, that we want to contain the cost, and then by not compromising the treatment, not undertreat the people. And hopefully it will be integrated. So the project was, again, to do the cost effectiveness study on this. And that time, that in 92, actually, there was a bill that the Colorado, I guess there are people from Colorado knows more than I do, the Colorado system there. So 92, the bill was passed to evaluate the pilot study. And at that time, there was the community mental health service to bid, I guess, the total of 17 community mental health service in Colorado. And they want to use a mental health service center as the point of single entry to the capitation, and much comprehensive than the one we had in California. So actually, there are two kinds of capitation. Again, you see, when the capitation, how are you going to do it? How are you going to deliver? So this is like the county or the mental health service directly responsible for. So like we call it a MAKE model. So it's not for profit. They're responsible for financing, get the money, and pay the delivery services, and deliver service too. So there's full risk on that. And so this is a single agency. In some counties, some mental health service organization, that they wanted to joint venture with the private sector. So it's for profit. So there's a limit, though. The limit up to 5%. And then you have to monitor that. And the extra benefit, you have to increase the service access, get more people to be delivered. So monitoring is a key thing, and to not just make money out of it. So this is there's some incentive there, though, because it's a for-profit and joint venture of this. And what the study wanted to do is to look at the three systems. One is the fee-for-service, because some are still doing as usual, and some are the capitation but under for-profit, some are under not-profit. Now, when we do the cost analysis, actually at that time, still, I think Colorado has a good data system, on claim data system, in terms of utilization and cost. But if we want to look at the outcome, you have to be really serious. You have to design instrument and you follow the individual. So therefore, that if we wanted to follow the individual for over the years, we have to random sample individuals from these three sites and to follow them to find the outcome measurement. So this is the design which we're talking about, that we want to identify the individuals. Not only they have cost data in the mental health centers, but also when follow these individuals, hire a lot of case workers. June did a lot of trips to Colorado and to follow them to get data on that, and make sure that they're comparable and also they're stratified random sample on that. So during that time, there's seven community mental health centers, Mahasa they're called, is to be including this study. So the green one in the top north is non-capitated, including Denver, which is a big city here, right? So that's the fee-for-service then. And then there's the model one, which is the not-for-profit, which is the blue area. And the southern part is the joint venture part. So from these three sites there, we want to follow them for about 3 years and to study the cost and outcome of the program. Well, we need sort of a model to analyze that. So essentially, we have the state has the policy instrument, capitation, and then we look at the provider behavior in terms of availability, organization, financing, and we look at consumers, who are these people involved in that, and we affect that for delivering service there. And so they depend on, again, we look at the cost and access and functioning. So this model that help us to sort of to organize the data and then fit into the program. Now, because of these kind of dependent variable, of course, there's the users, non-users, especially we want to look at access issue. So we want to look at two-part model, look at how that affects them. And we also, because over time, this is a very rich data set. So we have a pre and post, the post one period, post two period. So we want to look at differences, the model there. And capitation, for-profit, not-for-profit, for fee-for-service. And then we look at the data in terms of access issue, look at the quality of life, Tony Lehman's instrument. We also look at the SF-36 and all those kind of quality of life measurement, symptom measurement. So all these that collect individually takes a lot of time. Now again, you can see because we want to pick the impact on the severely mentally ill, so you can see the sample size under the three group. So we have about 520 individuals and fit into the three program there, and they all have a severely mentally ill population there, and so this is the basic distribution, and we have a model which includes a lot of dummy variable. Look at that. So essentially, we want to look at the program, the post, one period, post, two period, what are those numbers? Too many numbers, so we're going to just look at one slide and cover that. This slide tells all. This slide shows the cost of fee-for-service, pre and post. Not much difference. Fee-for-service, right? That's what we expect. Cost per user. We can also cost per person within the system there. But you can see also the people under capitation, it's a public system, the not-for-profit, there are not much difference either. There's a reduction in the second period. But you look at the model two, which is the for-profit, there was a drastic reduction there. Drastic reduction there. And then, well, where it's come from? Well, it's come from here. Look at the access. We look at the probability of use, the two-part model, the first part. You can see there's some reduction there. There's not much different, but some reduction there. There's a little reduction there. There's a drastic reduction there. There is a question about access abuse. So then the question is, are those people did not use, sacrificed? What are the outcome of this patient? Well, we run separate analysis. For those who were severely mentally ill, schizophrenia, we run this two-part model. We look, no difference. No difference. And actually, when we look at all these outcomes there, actually you can see that there's a lot of zero there. Zero means no difference. Okay. Compared to what? Compared to capitation to the fee-for-service, capitation not for profit, no difference at all. And for profit, well, there's some plus sign there. There's a favorable sign there. So the story behind it is that how they can deliver the service there, reducing service, but then there's the people in the program, you could have, again, a substitution between inpatient, outpatient service there. And so the story tells us that, well, again, capitation in this Colorado model says that for those capitation, the for-profit seems called saving more than the non-profit there. Right? But actually now, I guess we want to make sure there's more time for discussion there. So you can see that there is no change of difference in terms of the outcome, but there's a difference in terms of cost savings there. There are other studies there, under Jones leadership. We have many, many papers coming out. The one study actually from a visitor from University of London, Richard Grief, and he's trying to look at the quality of life, combined data. Different methodology and all that still shows that for-profit capitation comes out a little better than others. But the one nice thing about the final study is this is coming out from psychiatric services, right? And Howard Goldman, the editor. So it's not appeared yet, right? It's forthcoming. So this is 5-year study. So look at from the longer term, what happened to the capitation. If the 5-year research, the data, this time we only look at the cost because we couldn't afford to look at outcome anymore, the 5-year. And in fact, in Colorado, all the counties are capitated. So there's no fee for service. So what we did is we looked at just comparing between capitation for profit versus not for profit. And you can see, now this is the sort of entire mental health service membership. Per individual data. It's not no longer 522. Okay? It's a total sample over 5 years on that. So you can see that the 5,000 individuals and then the not-for-profit, or 5,700 as compared to for-profit, 500 there. And again, this is the last table I'm going to show you. So you can see that over the time, this is not-for-profit from 1994, which is the baseline. And this all adjusts to the 1994 dollar value, okay, to 1999. So there is some decline at the beginning of the capitation, the first few years, but then come back again somewhat there. And but then look at the for-profit there. So compare these two, again, the membership, actually capitation, membership in the system, one is the 5,300. And the per cost by 1999 for for-profit still kept at the much lower level than the not-for-profit case. So what we can see here, the result is that the cost of in both for-profit and non-profit, the cost of inpatient and so on, have been reduced over time, but the reduction is coming from, one is the length of stay. So you could have the admission to the hospital. It does not compromise the access, but the length of stay being reduced. And the other thing is that there's also, for the for-profit, there's a reduction of the number of outpatient visits there. And but they were under the managed care system. And then also that not-for-profit sort of did not change that much in the last 2 years. So it does take a longer time to realize this the benefit of capitation, and there are some difference in the savings over time. So what happened now? So actually that in 2004, the mental health system in Colorado, according to my reading and the conversation with the state, saying that it's really the Department of Mental Health, health policy is in charge of the financing. Responsible for the Medicaid mental health service there. And behavioral health organization, that is the sort of required to do the network and including the mental health service there. This is a typo. This should be VHO. VHO or capitated as a vendor. And then that is, so it could be including the mental health service for-profit BHO or non-profit BHO. But still, they're required to have an integrated system in Colorado, and they have to fund by per membership as well. So from these kind of study, I guess we know quite clearly in that case management and managed care is an effective delivery system to contain the cost. Capitation may be in the effective financing, but really you want to look at how you can do it and what is incentive, what are design involving that. And to do those kind of improving of cost and quality, it requires financing innovation and integrated service there. So what is the future opportunities? And especially looking at the President Obama's healthcare reform, from the bill, of course, there's an election there, but from the bill that is supposed to start from next year, 2011, that the community mental health service should get more funding for that. And there are requests for further innovative service there, more integration to do. So I think that given those kind of opportunities, and we also know that the state and local government are facing the financial problem. So if the federal government does to provide more funding to the state and the local level, I think for the mental health service, especially the community mental health services, the integration and the capitation, and also I was talking about, maybe we want to talk about more like the medical side of it, design some kind of a pay for performance, you know, so therefore in the mental health system there, which made more challenging than the medical field. But this is maybe one way you can do, and try to provide more service to the people in the mental health service area. I think that is my end of the discussion, and many papers are generated from these three studies. So it's available, and it's online, and I want to thank you for your attention. Thank you.
So I think what the literature, the early literature suggested, people talked about the pernicious incentive associated with capitation, where the incentives are to enroll as many people because you get paid on a per member per month basis, but then underserve them, and that's where you sort of realize profit. Your second bullet in your conclusion talked about incentives and the importance of incentives here. So I guess my question is, what were the incentives in the Colorado model that allowed that managed care company to overcome the pernicious incentive and apparently deliver a more efficient service that was equally as effective as everybody else?
Well, I think I'm saying my understanding. I think John probably knows a lot more than that. I think there's two things. One, the incentive here is that you allow have some profit. It could be used for the things that you like to do, but you cannot take all the money for the things you like to do. Only there's a limit on that. The second thing is that you have to be monitored. So if it's just with the capitation, with the incentive, without monitoring the operation, and then they can do what they do and the service and to do it. So I think the monitoring the outcome and will be an important one to look at that. And I think if I were to redesign or try to have another kind of system, I think the incentive could be go further. We will look at withhold some of the funding and to see whether the outcome measurement, like a pay-for-performance issue, some of the key things that we can look at from consumers' feedback and then see whether they can do it. And so we want to do the monitoring, not only the size of operation, but also want to look at the outcome of the individuals. So I don't know whether John has any comment about Colorado issues.
Because they had enough money that they raised the salaries of the people and they got better people coming in, they had better qualifications. And so that was, I think, very important did look at a lot of characteristics of the mental health centers, but we didn't really look at whether the qualifications of these providers improved. But the word was that they were really hiring more people in, and people were moving in from out of state to work in Colorado. So that was good.
Do you know how your longer-term results compare with other studies?
I think we're the first one that's done in this kind of a long-term study. That was the basis on which we got the money from NIH to do the second study was because there wasn't any long-term studies that were 5 years.
I think the folks out in Minnesota have. They didn't do a comparative modeling, you know, across three financing systems the way you had it here. But I seem to remember that Nicole Lurie and a group of people at Minnesota, they had to follow their population out for almost 10 years before they began seeing a difference, favoring the, on the capitation, where the capitation model actually turned negative. They had almost to follow that outcomes for about a 10-year period. I don't quite know how to interpret that. I mean, what it implies is that, you know, we seem to have our way of thinking about this one-to-one relationship about underserving people and a catastrophic outcome, but there's apparently a tremendous, sponge capacity there that people can absorb, you know, whatever, I don't even call it, deprivation or the lack of services or whatever. And, you know, there are people who talk about one of our problems with the mental health system is we provide too many services. So the efficiency maybe that the capitation models are discovering, in fact, you know, maybe a real finding. But that's why it's so important to figure out what's in the black box and what are the operative incentives and exactly what are they doing. Because otherwise, if it's just capitation, and if we draw our conclusions at that level, as Tate pointed out, there's a whole family of claims that are called capitation, some of which may perform very well and some of which may not perform
well.
Well,
there were a couple things we couldn't evaluate.
Yeah.
We knew that in the for-profit parts of the state that there was kind of a churning of people,
mm-hmm.
and the group that was mostly churned were young male people with diagnoses of schizophrenia. And so we looked very carefully at that as best we could. But what they had done was they were providing some support group services, and they gave permission to use the center facilities to run these groups, but they didn't take any kind of, they didn't know who was using the groups, so we had no way to evaluate whether those groups were helping keep these people out of services. So there are some things there that we really didn't know about. But one of the, Tay was commenting about how many papers we had. I think that it's attributed to the fact that we had a lot of postdocs working on the but it was also attributed to the fact that we carefully looked at these vulnerable groups, and we found in the base border collecting primary data that it looked like African Americans might be more vulnerable in for-profit areas. So we did a separate analysis that Lonnie Snowden ran, looking at minority groups and seeing, because there's a large Hispanic population Colorado, there's not a very large African American, and a lot of it is concentrated in this area, Denver, and the suburbs. But we did not find any differences that we looked at the elderly. We did not find any differences for them. So we were, you know, trying to see what kind of differences there were. We also did some studies looking at the culture of the organizations and how that impacted outcomes, and there were found positive impacts on outcomes and also positive income impacts on the staffing, that the staff is more happy. So based on all these analyses, we had to conclude, without looking 10 years down the line, if NIH wants to give us more money. You know, 10 years down the line, if the state wants to give us access to their data. But, you know, we thought that 5 years, and I'm not aware of the study from Minnesota, so I would be very interested in seeing.
See, that's why I want to thank Agnes Rupp for funding. Yeah, Mac, Wendy.
We know that people with mental illness are more likely to have other problems, such as substance abuse and smokers. And I assume that the fact data payment wouldn't cover those kinds of treatments. So I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts as to how, you know, as long
Indeed. I think, you know, there's one study we did, which we don't have time to include in this, in Santa Clara County. Jenny and I did another randomized trial to only look into dual diagnosis the patient and with case management and with alcohol 12-step intervention. And then because, you know, we usually know about one-third of the severely mental ill has alcohol problem and drug problem. So we use same kind of sort of a delivery case management system, still shows that for the mental health who also have alcohol problem or drug, they reduce that the symptoms, I mean, they reduce the cost, and but not really the change of the much of a symptom. So the dual diagnosis is a key problem in the severely mental health community. Yeah. Hi, Karen. Really?
In terms of access to care, I mean, in Colorado, even if you have insurance, there's a waiting list before you get access to care to get into the systems. And then the case management models vary so much. So it's really a very, it's like the underdog.
Is that right?
So looking at people that are in the system and figuring out how much service they really do need and what is that case management model that is the most effective. Because there are nurse case management models, there's psychiatric case management models, and that varies so much. It's like
and how would you characterize California?
California's a little bit better. I mean, they definitely still have long waiting lists.
California still has a totally public county operated system. Are there county programs that operate on a for profit or a not for profit basis?
I don't think there is for profit. All the states, the state of California, the mental health department, funding only for the county level people. Yeah. David. Dave.
He has more gray hair.
He has more gray hair. Sorry about. No, he raised a few more times already. I want to make sure on the left side should have.
Okay. Yeah. One is the least studied district in Florida, and I enjoy so much experience. We were a group of us at 5 different sites we're looking at, so comparing various kinds of managed care models. And one thing that we came to appreciate, it took us a while to figure this out, is that under some of the HMO models, the for-profit HMO models, there was a significant deterioration in the quality of the encounter data that were submitted to us, because they were claiming, you know, they weren't having to, they were supposed to keep ghost records, but in Florida at least, and I think this was true in other states, so remind me, the monitoring wasn't there to keep that ghost system up. So that would be consistent with the findings you have here, but that isn't a concern to you. So you know the quality of the
right,
cost data.
The first year there was some concerns because you know you were telling them that they have to give you data
right.
And the whole idea of capitation,
yeah.
But you don't.
Yeah.
But they monitored them and got them up to the level of speed that we expected, and they continued to monitor them. So we felt fairly comfortable that we were getting all the data.
Good. Second question is, did you see any cost shifting to the general health side? Sort of relates to the question about integration. We saw a little of that in Florida, where actually there was appeared to be increased general medical expenditures for people who were at at-risk capitation arrangements in behavioral health. Did you see any of that here or no?
In Colorado?
Yeah, yeah. Or,
did you do an analysis?
I think there are some of our data include medical costs of people, right?
One of the California counties that you showed an increase in the health costs,
yeah.
Right? In the comparison.
Yeah, in the California study, because during that time we kept thinking that one of the things is mental health, so right. This cost should be something.
And, yeah.
So it really depends on what covers.
Right.
And to turn to your first question, I think, you know, for our data, for the Colorado data, we have outcomes for the first 3 years. But in the 5-year study, the follow-up, we don't have the outcome measures, because these are only the cost per member and so on. So it's difficult to address whether there's a deterioration or not. But in my conversation with Colorado, individual in charge of it. She told me that right now, in terms of Medicaid, mental health population, still we're able to control the cost. But not sure about the satisfaction, but this is a control cost. On the other hand, for the other mental health, such as depression and so on, and people really have still under fee for service. So there's an uncontrollable cost there. So that's the problem. So in that sense, you know, mental health capitation is ahead of the general medical service there, at least in some instances. Yeah.
I was wondering if you had some advice for young mental health economists and where they should direct their attention. Because you help resolve some of the controversies and issues. Uh-huh. That was some new questions. I was wondering. If Agnes was here and was ready to tell the new young mental health economist where to go, and she said, Tayway told me.
Well, there's a new trend, new direction. Number one, we call it medical technology, and essentially the medication, which is coming more and more into the play, into the mental health service, particularly the high cost. So I think that's one area we could look into in this sector of the, you could call pharmacoeconomics, but which is too narrow. I think what we need to do is to look at system-wide analysis of a mental health service research, and where the focus is on the technology improvement. I think that would be one area to look at. I'm just thinking about it. Second thing is, you want to look at Obama's health reform. I think there are a lot of unresolved issues here, emphasizing on the innovation, information technology, including mental health services. How can I think, well, cost saving, where is cost saving coming from? Does it really the information system that we're talking about in the health service really improve the quality and reduce the waste or overuse? So that would be another topic to look at. The third one, could look at the education itself, you know, all the reform, financing reform, and to see what kind of the area that we can take advantage of the information system, and with the knowledge of the research, you know, to see what we can do. So I think that these are the old topics, but I think new topics can be coming into the play, and really trying to make it much broader. Start more topics we can talk about, endless topics. I bypass the topic of heritage. This is going to put a black box.
Yeah.
And Howard Goldman's not here. He's an expert on that. But if you're not talking about heritage, it's a tremendous problem. How do you deal with this mental health, especially in the community mental health service? The impact on cost relation. So people can still write proposals, grant, and do it. So there's a future in research.
Start. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do